Good morning. It's an honor to be here. And I'm excited about the discussion that we're about to have. I guess I'd start with the name behind us and a quote that was mentioned last night and why this conference even exists with Norman Borlaug. And the quote that was mentioned last night relative to just really the essence of what this meeting's about, the essence of what that man was about, and the Green Revolution. And just simply the fact that food is a moral right, and all that are born really have the right to food, and that's why we're all here. If there's one common thread, no matter the country, the age, the background, or even the different maybe political or policy positions we have, I think that's common. I'll start with a slide that I've used traveling around over 30 global universities this year, and that is food security. To the next generation, food security, creating these four words we're all about: safe, abundant, affordable food. No matter where you are, what you do, I think we all agree that's what this is about. And candidly, that's what Norman Borlaug wanted his legacy to be, and probably what he would want us to be talking about today. And I think the essence of productivity is critical. We will live, and our kids will live, in this generation that last October we passed the 7 billion mark on population. And they say it'll race pretty quickly to 9 billion, and then things will likely change and population will level off or there'll be a change. But we will live between the 7 and 9 billion mark. And I would candidly say, as I say in our global pharmaceutical company or in any university with doctors and energy people and engineers, and to say, hold it a minute, this is food security, agriculture, food is the hottest industry, the most critical industry, the most critical issue during this window of time. And we are the leaders. And no question, when you come to the World Food Prize, the leaders that sat in that room last night are the leaders that are going to shape really what's going to happen between 7 and 9 billion people. That's the essence of it. So in a quick 3 to 4 minute, what's our playing field that we have? We've all heard these things. But if I summarize to say, here's what I see as the playing field and what many of the talks over the last few days have been about is more people live with food as an issue than those that don't. I'll come back to this in a second. Our global population increase, the rising demand. We're going to talk a little bit about something that wasn't talked a lot about so far and also wasn't even talked to, I think, about 20 minutes in the whole G8 Chicago Council was on the animal-based protein. Touch a little bit about that today. The environmental impact, the economic constraints, and the public issues. Those, I believe, are the six drivers to the playing field that we're on between 7 and 9 billion people. If I just hit quickly a few slides through them. First, this whole more live without with food is an issue than those that don't. Let me try to put this in context. This came, I lived last October, I took 6 20-year-olds. To the largest slum that I was aware of in Kibera and lived in the slums for 5 days. And it took those 5 days living in the slum to hit this reality that I'm part of. That's the global income distribution of the world, that I truly do live in a bubble and I live on that thin green line because the average income is $7,000 in the world. And I had to go realize that. And then I had a very brilliant man that lived in those slums that led me around for 5 days say to me something that kind of hung in my heart, and that is 43% of the world, as we all know, lives on $2 a day or less. And then he turned to me as we looked out over the slums, and he said, now hold it a minute, and also 1 out of 4 families in the U.S. and Europe are struggling to put food on the table. So forget about the 1 billion or the 850 million that are in hunger, unsecure with food. No, more than 1 out of 2 people live with food as an issue. If you take the 43% and 1 out of 4 tables that aren't that, you put those numbers together, people that wake up every morning wondering about where and when is my food going to come. I won't starve, but this is a big deal, and this is the essence of the world that we live in. So that's one reality. The second is just this population increase. We're adding about 4.5 million per month. We're adding a Chicago and an LA every month in population. And that's not going to stop here, probably during our working lives here in this room. So that's the population. I say there's a lot of people claiming the 7th billion baby that was born on October 31 last year. I don't know This is one mother that's claiming this is the child, but we've got 7 billion now, not nearly 6 billion that I was talking about when we were here a couple years ago. So the population increases. The other is just this wave of hunger, and putting it in the context of really the significance of this. It is the number one health problem in the world. I sit around the table in a pharmaceutical company where there's 5 presidents. There's an oncology cancer president. There's a diabetes president. There's an Alzheimer's neuro president. And then there's kind of the all other disease. And then there's us. We are in the people business, as I say. And I tell everybody there in our company the last 30 days, we've had 2 big breakthroughs in Alzheimer's and in breast cancer. And the analysts and all the disease people are very excited, and I stop and say, hold it a minute. Remember, we're the number one health problem, and oh, by the way, we've already found the medicine. As Norman Borlaug says, we have the solutions. All this dialogue that we've been talking about today is connecting the solutions. We've got the answers. It's different than Alzheimer's and cancer, but it's as devastating as those. Kills more than AIDS, malaria, tuberculosis, war combined. And as I say, it's about 60 airplanes a day falling from the sky. So that's the clinical side. But there's also what I would say in disease terms, a subclinical side. This is where we get to more live with hunger than those that don't. There's a hidden hunger. That's the getting up every morning, wondering when and where our food is going to come from. In the city I live in, Indianapolis, 8 out of 10 kids in Indianapolis public schools count on a free lunch and a free breakfast. No, they're not going to starve from hunger. But we have a problem in our city, just as probably Des Moines and others, and that is just this longing of knowing and being secure with food around the table, or being secure when I go home on the weekend, as many kids in this city will, wondering when and where I will get meals until Monday morning back at school. So that's a little bit of the context. The other one is the other playing field that we don't talk a lot about. This came out of Foreign Policy magazine last year. But there's 3 billion of the 7 billion people. I heard Bill Gates speak on this for the first time. There's 3 billion people that are on a plant and rice diet, that are striving to go across the chasm to eat meat, milk, and eggs for the first time. Over 60% of the demand in emerging markets in this window between 7 and 9 billion people are going to strive for the first time, meat, milk, and eggs. This is important to understand this, I think, dynamic in our playing field. The environmental impact. Today, we're living on about 1.25% of the world. How do we do this? I think this productivity dialogue here today, we need to touch a little bit on the environmental aspect as well. And then the public affairs issues, which we know are out there, and the politics and the public affairs issues linked to food. So I see this as, this is our playing field. But I am coming back to, I think, the realities. So let me just end with an example. And I want to end with an example because I think sometimes we lose a little bit of the context with slides and discussions and the discussion at a high level. And I had somebody... Hopefully my walking mic here, does this work? Is an egg. I had to speak to 40,000 employees in our company that most of them didn't know anything about food and agriculture, but there were scientists all over the world in our company, and I had 10 minutes. And I decided to dig into the story of an egg. Why an egg? There's a lot about an egg. First and foremost, this is the bridge between a plant and a rice diet and maybe what you would call a middle-class diet. This is the longing of mothers all over the world. When I was in Kibera in those slums, you saw mothers saying, if I could get my child just one egg a day. Shoot, the table I sat around with mothers in eastern Indianapolis, it was the same thing. What's in an egg? And I think Dr. Finn can explain this a lot better than me. It's the calories, the nutrients, the nutrition to totally change a kid. One a day. That's all we need. And this can change brain development. This can change the nutrition. When the brain development changes, the education changes. When the education changes, a lot of people in this room know better than me, the economics and a community changes. So I'm one of the leaders in Elanco. We are one of the leaders in poultry research. Shoot, I didn't even know until I had to give this talk. And you start to unravel the significance of an egg. What's going on in the egg industry right now? Where are we? Well, I'll tell you right now, from this time to a year ago, there are less eggs per person than there were a year ago. We are going backwards in eggs. Let me show you a chart. If you could show the chart, the next slide, please. This, if you go to the next slide. This is the situation. I'm going to make you egg experts right now. There's 6.5 billion hens in the world producing about 174 eggs. But if you look down there in the far left or whatever, we have a negative trend going on. We're losing an egg per hen per day. We're going backwards. So when you put that against the population growth, the 6.5 billion egg or 6.5 billion hens will need to triple. We'll need to triple if this trend continues. We can't triple. We can't go to 18 billion hens. And there's three drivers to this negative trend. One is disease. There is a health problem with hens. And as an animal health leader, that's a concern. There's a flu that just hit Mexico, an avian flu. Wiped out 22 million birds. There's an egg shortage. Mexico City, in less than a year, eggs are up 3 times the cost. Second is just the lack of innovation. There's companies like us not focused and targeted on innovation in the ag industry. Candidly, this wasn't one of the big proteins that we were focusing on, like dairy and beef and poultry. And the third is animal welfare. There's policies and approaches on how to raise birds that maybe came from a minority voice that actually have flipped productivity upside down and actually increased disease. California would be an example of that, as eggs are up over 20%, egg production is down because of a proposition that was put on a ballot a few years ago. Those three drivers have flipped this thing upside down, and really the choice then, if you hit the tab, please, we really have a choice of, are we headed to 11 billion more hens? Are we headed to, if you hit it again, please, 4 billion more? As a leader in poultry research, we must change this trend. But I come back to more the moral aspect of this. I come back to thinking about Sarah, a young teenage daughter that is sitting with her mother saying, we just want to be able to provide my younger brother and sister with more food here in Indianapolis or in Kibera, the slums in Kenya. One more egg a day can make all the difference in the world and can change a cycle. This is more of a realistic, I think, practical example of what we're faced with between 7 and 9 billion people. And it's going to be us, the leaders in this room, that change that trend. So that shapes hopefully a little context for our discussion around what I believe is ultimately a slide. The last slide here I have is these three numbers I shared back 3 years ago when I spoke here. It's this simple. And by 2050, we need 100% more food. 70% of that or more has to come from technology. Technology is just doing things better, like the last discussion up here about cold pack to a better farm practice to genetics to a product that may change a trend on an egg productivity level. 70% is around productivity, and that's really the essence, I think, of this dialogue right now over the next 45 minutes is what entails in that 70%? It's a moral imperative as much as an economic and environmental imperative. Okay. Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you, John.
You know, I'll conclude by saying thank you to this panel. It's an honor to sit here with such a diverse and such an experienced panel, and thank you, Margaret, for leading us in this discussion. I guess I would conclude by just saying a couple things. I think we link back a lot to these three things, this safe, abundant, affordable food and food security. You know, through my lens of listening and a lot of talks and a lot of dialogue, like all of you, innovation or technology, whatever you call it, we've got to do it better. We've got to do it better. Two is choice. Choice is important. Maybe it links to the free-range eggs. We need to let everybody choose. There's vegetarians in this audience that have heard about animal-based protein, and I've got a vegetarian that runs all of our manufacturing and half our employees. I believe in choice. We all should believe in choice, whether that's at a country level or a consumer level or that's a teenage daughter level. Choice matters. I have two of them, It's my biggest leadership challenge right now is my two teenage daughters. Choice matters. But when choice becomes your choice and your beliefs are so strong that suddenly you no longer have a regulator, you have a minority voice that suddenly becomes the new regulator, we have a problem. Then we start to get what Norman Borlaug says is immoral and wrong. And third, I think, is trade, is globalization. We need to take technology globally. We need to execute it on the ground better, whether that's cooking technology or whether that's a new product or a new practice. We need to let meat, milk, eggs, grains move around the world. That's the only way to fully solve between 7 and 9 billion people. But I end with this. I ask all of you, I never ever end an audience, I'm sorry, but I'll come back to maybe this. I don't want you to look at an egg differently. What I ask every single employee in my company is every single quarter, every month if you can, we give them a half a day. Go out and see a hungry face. Because when that happens, I believe what I said at the G8 is the hunger inside of us. I don't care if you're a politician, a farmer, a dietitian, wherever you stand on these issues, we got to get out of our bubble because most of us live in a bubble. The hunger inside of us wanting to become a part of something bigger is the solution to the physical hunger that this thing is all about. That's what Norman Borlaug had that I believe we need. And when that happens, things change. I've seen things change. I've lost control of my company. Because when people see this, it's suddenly about a cause. And this is truly what our cause is. I'm in the middle of a month-long hunger challenge. And I got my 6 kids, myself, my wife, eating rice and beans like half the world all week. And I'm going to interview them. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm going to interview them, okay, tonight. And they aren't very happy about the rice and beans, okay? What they don't realize is week number 2, we're going on a food stamp budget. We're all living on $4.18 a day. My challenge is when we get outside of our bubble, things change. Don't leave the World Food Prize 2012 without getting out of your bubble. Because I'm telling you, with the intellect in this room, we light our fire more like Norman Borlaug, things will change. And we will unfold this egg story over the next few months. If you want to follow along in social media, we're going to tell more and more about this because I think it takes these kind of examples. Thank you. Thank you for who you are, what you do. Thanks.